Society of Plant Biologists. Today's program was prepared by Susan Linville, with help from Jerome Howard at the University of New Orleans. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
If you have not yet switched to digital TV, please note that WILL-TV will end its analog television broadcasts at 6 a.m. this Tuesday. If you still have questions about the digital transition, please contact us at 217-333-7300 or online at will.illinois.edu.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designer of the Carle Foundation's Echo Building, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
Let's take a look at sports news now. The New Jersey Devils have lost the first two games of their three-game road trip tonight. They'll make a stop at the United Center, where the Chicago Blackhawks will try to make it three. The Devils have won four in a row against the Hawks and have already clinched a playoff spot. The Bulls are off tonight before continuing their homestand against the Indiana Pacers. Tomorrow, Chicago is 23-12 at the United Center this season. The Bulls own the third-best record in the East behind Cleveland and Orlando since the All-Star break. The scene is set for the West Regional title game tomorrow, with Connecticut playing Missouri. They advanced last night with wins over Purdue and Memphis. In the East Regional finale tomorrow, Pitt will face Villanova. Pittsburgh advanced with a win last night over Xavier, while Villanova got the better of Duke. South Regional play resumes tonight in Memphis. The first game of the night has Oklahoma playing Syracuse, while Gonzaga goes against top seed North Carolina in the second outing. The winners meet Sunday for the right to play in the Final Four in Detroit. And there are two games in Indianapolis tonight as play in the NCAA Men's Midwest Regional continues. Game one has Louisville playing Arizona, while the nightcap has Kansas meeting Michigan State. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Trophy Time in Champaign, with plaques and promotional products to recognize all occasions from athletic endeavors and musical moments to business achievements. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. Additional information available on the web at trophytime.com.
Next time on PRI's The World, local elections across Turkey have some new faces. Candidates include Jews, Armenians, and a transvestite. Some Turks are calling it democratization, others call it window dressing. Turkish elections, that's during the day's news, coming up at 3 o'clock today on The World. Economic development was a key plank in Laurel Pressing's platform when she first ran for mayor of Urbana. Pressing narrowly defeated Todd Satterthwaite with the argument that the incumbent hadn't done enough to attract business to the city. Now, as Pressing faces three challengers who each say they could do a better job in spite of a recession, AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Laurel Pressing says one of the major issues in the 2005 Urbana election was how to bring in more retailers.
I think going door to door, I found and the council members found that people's most frequent request was to get more shopping in Urbana. And I think we have really gotten that accomplished. In 4 years, there are literally dozens more stores and restaurants in Urbana.
As she seeks a second term as mayor in 2009, Pressing says she and the city council have worked together to attract and retain business, especially to downtown Urbana and Philo Road. But both Republican challenger Rex Bradfield and Green Party candidate Darrell Cruz say many of the business openings trumpeted by Pressing actually got their start when Todd Satterthwaite was mayor. And Bradfield says Pressing's focus on retail development doesn't cover what Urbana needs most.
Urbana must have jobs that are high-paying jobs, that hire people from the University of Illinois, bring people in and live here, and we increase our tax base without increasing our taxes.
Bradfield told a candidates forum hosted by the Urbana Business Association that he wouldn't rely on tax incentives or new infrastructure to attract business. Instead, Bradfield wants to review the city code and eliminate what he sees as outdated or unnecessary provisions that cost businesses money. For example, he says a city ordinance dictating a minimum size for business parking lots makes them bigger than they have to be. He says allowing smaller parking lots would make it cheaper to build in Urbana.
Once you make it less costly to develop, then you attract jobs, you attract big businesses to come in here and develop in Urbana rather than developing somewhere else because it doesn't cost them so much up front.
Daryl Cruz says if he's elected mayor, he'll review Urbana's economic incentive programs. And while he didn't name specifics, he promised to throw out programs that don't work and develop new ones. He says he'll work closely with business groups and encourage residents to shop locally. Cruz says economic development isn't up to the mayor, but the people that the mayor brings together.
I think the role of the mayor is to be the facilitator and collaborator of building the networks amongst the departments within the city, the business community, and the developers, the financial institutions, to be on the same page in a concerted effort to be able to bring economic development to Urbana.
Independent candidate Rob McCauley has focused on changing Urbana's nuisance ordinance. He says that's a business issue, too, because things like noise and loitering can keep customers away. McCauley told the UBA Candidates Forum that the current ordinance requires the victim to follow up on their own nuisance complaints, something he says should be done by the city.
If I were mayor, I would create a system whereby perpetrators of nuisance would be processed without requiring the victims, which could be any of you, to take time out of your lives. And this would also relieve you of the danger of retaliation for complaining.
And McCauley says there's another change he'd make if elected mayor.
I think it's important that Urbana have its non-political chief administrative officer. For one thing, it's required by city code.
It's a point all three of Prussing's challengers agree on. Mayor Prussing removed Urbana's last administrative officer, Bruce Walden, nearly 2 years ago by placing him on administrative leave and letting his contract expire without renewal. The city has operated without an administrative officer since then. Bradfield says the vacancy means that Urbana city government could lack continuity as mayors come and go. Cruz says he wants the chief administrative officer to be the city's point person for economic development and do the preliminary work that he says isn't getting done now. Mayor Prussing says she almost hired a chief administrative officer last year, but that her choice for the job decided to take another position closer to home in Indiana instead.
I still intend to fill the job, but I think that the city has performed very well. The people who are criticizing and saying we should have filled it earlier, well, you can create havoc if you don't get the right person.
Prussing says Urbana has done a good job with economic development without a chief administrative officer. She says new businesses like the Meyer store on Philo Road have boosted the city's tax base, meaning Urbana doesn't have to consider the sort of budget cuts that Champaign is wrestling with right now. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Tax credits have been extended and expanded for people who want to make their homes more energy efficient. To learn more, Lester Graham spoke with Ronnie Queller of the Alliance to Save Energy.
Ronnie, the stimulus package offers people a chance to save some money if they decide to insulate their home or replace their heating or cooling system. How much is available?
Right now, up to $1,500, which is three times the amount that was available under earlier legislation. They also expand the percentage of the cost that can be covered from 10% in the case of some of the items under the old law to 30%. The other good thing is that the tax credits have been extended through 2010. Originally, they were only for this calendar year. So I think that gives folks some opportunity to save and budget for some of these higher ticket items and get them in place between now and the end of 2010 and still get that $1,500 off their taxes.
Now, let's say I want to replace my old water heater. How much could I get back in tax credit next year?
30% up to $1,500. That's if a water heater costs $5,000, which probably it's not that expensive.
This is a tax credit, not a tax deduction. What's the difference?
That is correct. A tax deduction means you take the amount off your taxable income and then you're taxed on a lower amount of income. A tax credit is worth more because once you have calculated the tax that you owe, it's a dollar for dollar reduction in that tax bill.
What kind of energy efficiencies make the most sense for a home? If I'm looking at my house, where should I start making changes first?
The thing that we usually recommend as the first step is to seal and tighten up the house with sufficient insulation for your climate region, and then sealing leaks and cracks around doors and windows with sealing products such as caulking, weather stripping, and foam sealants. And the good news is that all those types of products are now eligible for these tax credits, again, assuming that they meet the standards that are in the law.
We tend to think of the Environmental Protection Agency's Energy Star program as an assurance we're buying an energy-efficient product, but I understand not all Energy Star-labeled products qualify for these tax credits.
That's correct. The one change that makes life a little bit more complicated for consumers is that under the old law, all Energy Star windows qualified for a tax credit. Now there are certain additional requirements for the windows as well as for the heating and cooling equipment. So you can't just go by the Energy Star label. You really have to look at the very specific energy efficiency levels that these products must meet.
So if I need details on that kind of requirement, where's the best place to find them?
One of the best places would be the Alliance to Save Energy's website at ase.org/tax credits. We've made a great effort to have a user-friendly website that spells out the criteria in very clear language. The Energy Star website at energystar.gov is always very helpful in general on energy efficiency, as is the Department of Energy's Energy Savers booklet, which is at energysavers.gov.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Ronnie Queller is with the Alliance to Save Energy. I'm Lester Graham.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Joyce Foundation and the USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
When President Obama signed the $787 billion stimulus bill last month, he said it would create or save 3.5 million jobs. State and federal officials are ramping up efforts now to count those jobs. But how will they tell the difference between a new job, a saved job, and a job that would have been there no matter what? Joel Greenberg of New Hampshire Public Radio reports it won't be easy.
A stimulus job might be born on a night like this.
This is a business meeting. There will be no personal attacks tolerated.
In the town of Marlborough, New Hampshire, population 2,085, residents meet in the school gym to vote on every detail of the town's budget for the coming year. Headlining the debate is a plan to dig two wells for drinking water. At one point, a guy in a leather vest steps to the mic and asks Selectman John Northcott what sources of money might pay for this.
We have first applied for stimulus funds.
Now, let's assume Marlborough gets stimulus money for all or part of the project. The federal dollars will pay for some jobs, and the contractor will send a form to the state saying how many jobs were involved and how much those jobs paid. It sounds simple, but it isn't.
Here we go. It's on page 174.
In an office at the state capitol in Concord, Bud Fitch flips through a fat white binder. It's his Magna Carta for the federal regulations that guide his work as director of New Hampshire's Office of Economic Stimulus. Page 174 tells him he must count the jobs, but he's still waiting for the pages that will tell him how. It turns out, historically, different government agencies have used different approaches.
Some would count noses. How many people did you hire without a lot of constraint on whether it's full-time, part-time, low-paying, high-paying? Others would have you count the number of hours employees work without consideration to how many different people work those hours.
What's needed is a yardstick so that a job counted under one program will be the same as a job counted under another. Part of the complication is that not all jobs are created equal. Some are seasonal. Some allow you to work on more than one project at once, and so on. Picking one yardstick might seem relatively easy compared to the next challenge. How do you tell the difference between a job that was saved by the stimulus and a job that would have been there anyway? Bruce Meyer analyzes the labor supply as a professor at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Meyer says there are reasonable methods, but it's almost impossible to know what a firm would have done left on its own.
They might have increased their employment, even if you didn't have that jobs subsidy, because firms increase and decrease their employment all the time.
The agency in Washington that has to sort this out is the Office of Management and Budget. OMB's Deputy Director Rob Neighbors agrees that counting jobs, particularly saved jobs, is tricky. He says agencies will use several methods. They will ask for documentation that layoffs would have occurred without the stimulus. And there will be some estimating. But Neighbors says his office will be conservative. It's important, he says, that Americans can see where their tax dollars went. The funny thing is, if 2 years from now the economy is doing better, the public is unlikely to pay much attention to this tally of jobs. But Neighbor says the Obama administration wants to make another, broader point.
Part of the economic recovery needs to be the restoration of public faith in government intervention, in government activity.
The president ran against a mindset that believes the less government, the better. Counting the jobs that emerge from the stimulus is one way to challenge that, if enough people believe the numbers. For NPR News, I'm John Greenberg in Concord, New Hampshire.
Earth and sky.
Social interactions are the defining feature of humans and have shaped all of modern human biology and have set us apart as a species.
You're listening to anthropologist Carol Ward of the University of Missouri at Columbia. According to her research, our social intelligence, how we learn to interact with each other, has played a large role in our evolution.
And what we realized in looking at the data and thinking about how the brain works and how we're similar and different to other animals, that it's really the social interactions that have shaped human evolutionary history. None of the other theories explain all of the aspects of human uniqueness and how it fits together.
Ward said that fossil records, as well as archaeological evidence of behavior, show that the hominid brain increased 250% in less than 3 million years. Ward said that throughout human evolution, social interaction became increasingly important to evolutionary success. Humans needed large brains, she said, to negotiate different social settings and social groups.
And it's the interaction with members of our own species in terms of competition, cooperation, help, that has shaped the evolution of the human brain and human abilities.
I'm Lindsay Patterson for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible by Carle Foundation Hospital. Carle Foundation Hospital provided more than $80 million in community benefit last year, including almost $10 million in free or discounted care. More information about how Carle embraces its charitable mission is in its annual report at carle.org.
It's 3 minutes before 3 o'clock. The world is coming up next. Coming up next week on the Afternoon Magazine on Monday, Jeff Bossert will be sitting in for me. He will interview in the 1 o'clock hour journalist Michael Davis. They'll talk about Sesame Street. Davis is the author of Street Gang, the complete history of Sesame Street. I'll be back on Tuesday in the 1 o'clock hour on Tuesday, your opportunity to talk about taxes with Marty Verdick, CPA and Managing Director of Tax Services for RSM McGladrey Incorporated, and John Breen, Director, Tax Services for RSM McGladrey Incorporated. That's taxes. Talk with the tax experts on Tuesday following the 1 o'clock news. And then on Wednesday, we'll have the Capitol Steps, Politics Takes a Holiday, April Fool's Day special. That's at 1:06 on Wednesday, the 1st of April.